This is the A word on CFCR 90.5 on your FM dial, or perhaps you are listening to us stream out live on the web. I am your host, Bart Gazzola, and as I promised you last week, and now that I've dealt with some of the technical difficulties, we have a guest this week. Jeff Thomas is a photographer out of Ottawa, and I've talked a little bit about his exhibition, which is up at Paved Arts right now, titled Resistance is Not Futile. So, Jeff, welcome to the A Word.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on in terms of the show Resistance is Not Futile. You mentioned at your talk at Paved that this is work that stretches back, I believe you said, a decade.
Yeah, actually, it goes back much farther than that. I've been in the process over the last couple of years of trying to come to some conclusion about what I've been pursuing over the last 30 years of my practice, which includes curatorial work as well. And so I've been going through a series of experimentation through different galleries in that, and this is an installment along that path that was really inspired by my curatorial work on residential schools, an exhibition I curated in 2001 titled Where Are the Children? Healing the Legacy of Residential Schools. And I wanted to be able to respond with my own practice to the issues that I found through working on the residential school exhibition. So this exhibition was really kind of a confluence of those two different projects.
One of the things that's sort of interesting to me about this show is the fact that even though you sort of said this goes back a certain amount of time and it connects back to sort of previous curatorial projects, the work is still, and you'd commented in your talk, that it's something that's happening, it's in progress. And it's kind of an interesting thing because this is something that is extremely relevant, I find, right now in terms of this place. And just in terms of how, I guess because Saskatchewan right now is a place that in terms of suddenly having the national eye and suddenly in some ways having an international eye, and there's a really sort of strong Saskatchewan connection to the show in terms of the sort of, I like to think of it as the original portrait in the show of Thomas More, that it sort of offers a really important alternate take on what this place is.
Yes, and actually the exhibition evolved, it's kind of come full circle from an experience I had in Saskatoon in 2001 when I was invited out to take part on the panel. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I had just begun curating the residential school exhibition. And the subtitle to Healing the Legacy of Residential Schools was something that I hadn't addressed yet. So coming out here and knowing Lori Blundo, a local artist, I asked her if she knew anybody who'd be willing to speak to me on their residential school experience. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, her mother and grandmother had gone and that she would ask her grandmother if she'd speak to me. And by the time I arrived, Lori told me that, to her surprise, her grandmother agreed to speak to me. So we went out to her reserve and spent the afternoon interviewing Lori's grandmother. So it was very interesting for me coming back to Saskatchewan, and specifically to Saskatoon, after all these years, and to once again look at the residential school experience, but through my work, and also making it site-specific, focusing on specifically Saskatchewan, because it was so pivotal in that history. And so that's how it came about in terms of organizing the exhibition and making it specific, taking into account the Aboriginal community in Saskatoon and hoping that maybe that type of information would draw them into the gallery space.
That is kind of an interesting point because, I mean, one of the things about, well, we've actually seen a number of shows here lately, whether it be Ruth Cuthand's exhibition at the Mendel, but a couple of other artists as well, that we're actually sort of seeing the gallery spaces in some ways, I feel, catch up to the history of this place and sort of acknowledge what I think is a genuine history of this place, as opposed to always sort of looking elsewhere in terms of what's happened here. It's also kind of interesting, too, because in terms of, well, one of the things that attracts me to the show, as I said, is the idea that, to me, it's very much about this place. But one of the things that's also really, I don't know if entertaining is the correct word, is that I could picture this this exhibition traveling across Canada the same way that sort of you have in terms of some of the images that you've taken. And some of the images that you have there sort of have that same kind of hidden notion that, well, when you mentioned about the residential schools, there's a lot of people in Saskatchewan who very much hear what the Prime Minister has said about how Canada doesn't have a history of colonialism, despite the fact that, you know, this is the place that had residential schools up to the early 70s, I think. And so it's kind of interesting in that respect that there's kind of this hidden history or this kind of ignored history that in some ways echoes some of the architectural images you have in the show in terms of some of the things that are there that are sort of just either not acknowledged or just not even noticed.
Yeah. Well, you know, history is such an important part of understanding who Indigenous people are throughout North America. And the unfortunate part is, and certainly for me as a young person growing up and going to a public school in the United States, was the absence of Indigenous history being taught in schools. And one of my issues has always been how to address systemic racism, how to address the sense of invisibility that exists for Indigenous people, and why the issues we face are so misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And it comes from the absence of that history not being taught in school. So what I try to do with all of my projects is to integrate aspects of history into my work, and to hopefully at some point ignite an interest in wanting to know more about Indigenous people. An example is that I grew up in Buffalo, New York. Mm-hmm. My reserve is the Six Nations Reserve near Brantford, Ontario, just west of Toronto. And as a kid, I used to go back and forth quite often with my grandmother. One of the interesting things is that when I wasn't learning about my history in school, well, fortunately, one of my elders at Six Nations took over that role, and Emily General, and she's actually in the exhibition in the second piece in the show. Mm-hmm. And she ignited my interest in history, and she said to me several times that you have to know your own history, but you equally important is to know the white man's history as well, because mm-hmm. then you can begin to understand where you stand in relationship to all of these things that have been kind of submerged. And I took that as kind of the focus, the departure point for my work, and looking at history. So going back to Buffalo, New York, one of the interesting things that was important to me to learn as a young kid was that the city of Buffalo had actually been built over an Iroquois reservation called the Buffalo Creek Reservation. When I heard that information, it really changed my perception of the city. So here I was. I had a very different relationship to the city that none of the kids that in my class or in my neighborhood had, mm-hmm. and it changed the way that I began to look at the city and also urbanization and assimilation, and to think that, well, there's something here to fight for. What is it? And that's what I meant about going back and looking at my body of work over the last three decades for this exhibition, because it's also taking in stock my own personal history and exploration as well.
That's actually a point I wanted to pick up, because when you were talking about understanding, I don't know if I'd want to call them alternate histories of a place, but, you know, call them contested histories of a place, mm-hmm. is that one of the images in the show that, well, I mean, your son appears in a number of the images in your show. He actually has an entertaining video piece in the show that I've been back to watch a few times. But I think about the image of your son where he has the t-shirt that sort of references the Columbus celebrations back in 92.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things that I find interesting in terms of how, well, you mentioned growing up in Buffalo. I grew up in St. Catharines, not far from Toronto. And one of the things that's interesting is that when I saw that, it brought back a certain number of memories as well. Because my father is a good Catholic in the Knights of Columbus. And so that sort of date was a really important thing. And sort of talking to that generation about notions of how there's a different history here, or there's a history that you haven't acknowledged, and that perhaps the story is not the way you say it is something that can still be responded to with a great deal of anger. And it can sort of be really interesting to understand that, you know, that these places have their own sort of sites and they have their own sort of notions behind them.
Mm-hmm. Well, another interesting point in the exhibition that came full circle is the piece that I did with Adrian Stimson, mm-hmm. with his Buffalo Boy character. And that'll come back to specifically to 1992 and the photograph in the exhibition of my son that is wearing the T-shirt, showing both the front of it, Discover of the New World, with an image of Christopher Columbus, and then on the back of the T-shirt it says Little White Lies. That references my own experience in 1992 during the United States celebrations for the 500th anniversary of Christopher Columbus, which was a big deal back then. And one thing that really stood out to me was the way that he was kind of merchandised to the general public as the discoverer of the New World, which really submerged the fact that there were thriving indigenous cultures here in North America, some of which exceeded European cultures in terms of size and urbanization and organization and artistic output. There just was this real flourishing culture here. So I felt like, well, what does that mean then, New World? And I wanted to kind of take that to task. So one of the interesting things that happened during 1992 is that there was kind of a flood of documentaries and movies on Christopher Columbus, which referenced indigenous people. And I was watching one on TV, and it showed a Wild West town in South Dakota in the Black Hills. It was a recreation of the Wild West type of town. And on the boardwalk, there was an Indian man, a Lakota Sioux, dressed in tribal clothing, and he was standing next to his horse and posing for tourists. So I said, I want to go and I want to see that guy. I want to talk to him. So I decided this is going to be my first road trip. And in the process, I'm going to discover the New World as it is today. And so I finally got to the South Dakota town. I pulled in, saw the Lakota man standing on the boardwalk, and I couldn't bring myself to photograph him. And I felt like he would see right through me, and so I felt uncomfortable about that because I wasn't quite sure about my motivation in photographing him. So I just kind of watched him on the boardwalk and talking to tourists, and then I drove away and just kind of watched him fade from sight in the rearview mirror of the car. I continued west after that trip and then came back across Canada. And when I got back to Ontario and I kind of looked at my work and I thought, I hardly made any photographs at all. And so what did that mean in terms of indigenous history? Like, what was there for me to photograph? Mount Rushmore or the Battle of Little Bighorn Grounds in Montana? Aside from that, there was virtually nothing. So later that fall, a friend told me about in Ottawa, there was a Samuel de Champlain monument that had an Indian at the base. And so we drove up to Ottawa, and I photographed the Indian. And what was interesting is that all these tourists were around, kind of mingling around, taking shots of themselves with the Indian, because he was accessible, whereas Champlain was kind of hovering 20 feet in the air in this majestic kind of pose with his astrolabe. And the Indian was kneeling on one knee, and he had a bow in one hand, and he had a breechcloth. He was wearing a breechcloth, and that was about it. And I looked at him, and it reminded me of that guy in South Dakota. So one thing led to another. Over the years, it became a focal point in my work. The Indian was removed and placed across the street in Majors Hill Park in 1999. And I started using that vacant spot to invite people to come up and pose on the platform where the Indian used to be. And so over the years, I photographed people at that site. But I decided that the last one I was going to do would be this year. And when I heard that Adrian was coming to Ottawa, I decided to invite him up to the monument and to photograph him there. And so this is the type of ties that I produce in my exhibitions. So you have the link to with my son posed in the T-shirt, to Adrian posed at Nepean Point at the Champlain Monument. And those are the kind of links that I like to provide in the exhibition space so that people, if they're interested, can find those types of associations. But that was really the fact that the significance as well of my son is that I first photographed him in 1984 in Toronto against this backdrop of a brick wall that had Cultural Revolution spray painted on it. And that was the first time that I saw myself reflected in my son as an urban Indian. And from that point on, that's when the whole series began to focus on urbanization.
Well, there's actually, and that piece is in the show, and then, of course, the piece with Adrian, and you actually have a couple of other images of that excuse me, of that Champlain monument in Ottawa as well in the show. That's something that's actually really fascinating to me about this, because there's an aspect of this show that, well, it's fitting that your son has a video piece in this, because I feel that almost this exhibition in some ways is almost like looking at the sort of a father's photographs of his son as he grows up and sort of seeing himself within it, and it almost has a family album quality to it in terms of sort of the notion that, you know, you try to give your children certain things, and at the same time you also sort of want to make sure that they know things that maybe you didn't know, both in a more specific sense, but also in your case in kind of a wider historical sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings up a very interesting point, because when I first started developing an interest in photography, I was in high school, and I started, as my interest grew, I started looking for indigenous people who had made photographs, mm-hmm. and I couldn't find any. Yeah. Whether it was historically or in a contemporary sense. And the photographs that I did find were all made by non-Aboriginal people, so
yeah.
the photographs had this kind of vacancy to them. And I was really kind of perplexed by that, because my earliest experience with photographs was looking at my grandmother's family photographs. And what was so fascinating about that is that none of the photographs in her shoebox, where she kept them all, showed Indians,
mm-hmm.
you know, like whether it was for a powwow or an event or something like that. They were all people that were dressed, you know, in typical clothing of the time in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and they were on the reserve and in the city, and they were black and white photographs. And in my mind, I thought, that's what photographs of Indians look like.
Yeah, yeah.
So I never found them, you know, in the archive. And so when I started photographing my son, that was a bit, you hit it right on the head with that one, because it is an extension of the family photo album, but it's kind of, in a way, this post-colonial photo album is the way that I saw the photographs with my son.
Something also, and I remember making this comment as well, that I know a number of Aboriginal and First Nations artists who work in photography or work in video. And it's not so much that that, you know, that there's any kind of issue in terms of painting or anything like that. But I also think, too, that there's this element of history that always factors in. And I remember once commenting about Gabriel Yaya Kikut's work, that there's this aspect of the video work to it that offers you the opportunity to make a kind of documentary and to put it out there in the format, and therefore to say that, you know, this is just as much reality as that other sort of thing that I saw that I don't think is true. And so it's something that I think is really kind of interesting and really kind of important in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, along the same line of thought as well, and this is something, once again, going back to the work with my son, the first one took place when he was 7 years old, and there was, over the years, I photographed them, and there was always a question coming back to me, like, how did your son feel about being photographed?
Yeah.
And so I responded to it by saying, well, he just, you know, said, okay, I'll pose there for you or whatever. There was never really a question, but as he got older, he started saying to, he said to me that he realized that there was something important going on, and he didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Trusted me enough to do it, to pose. Yeah. And what was interesting is, and I think it comes back to an issue that's been very important to me, and that's the absence. Talking about history and absence is the absence of strong First Nations male role models in our community.
Yeah.
Much like there is in African-American communities in the United States, we have the same problem. And so where are our male role models? And this is something that was carried out in my work, because I lost my father to alcoholism at a very young age. I mean, mm-hmm. he didn't die, but I lost him to that murky world that he was a part of. My grandfather, who spoke our language and carried on and was a traditionally raised man, died at a very young age from alcoholism. So what I was looking at was breaking that cycle with my own son, and mm-hmm. by photographing him was a way to open the door to beginning to understand how do we go about mending that severed tie. And over the years, we kind of stayed in touch through the photographs and that. But it was probably about 10 years ago, I did my first artist residency here in Ottawa, and I invited Bear to come with me to help me out a bit. And from that point on, I began to mentor him, and mm-hmm. he started going back to his first love of video.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, over the last probably 3 years, we went from a relationship of son and mentor to collaborators, mm-hmm. so that what you see in the exhibition is responding to that question, well, what did Bear think about all this?
Yeah.
There you see it in his own work as his own artist. And once again, the importance of that is to show that that fathers and sons can work together, can spend time together, and actually move towards something that has meaning beyond the kind of negative world that we've been left to flounder in a way.
Well, the title of the show, Resistance Is Not Futile, it's definitely clear in all of the works, but it's also very, very clear in terms of the video piece that he does, because, of course, it's referencing the Star Trek notion of the Borg. And I actually think that's a very, on the one hand, it's a very sort of good kind of superficial reference, because, of course, there is that whole notion that in terms of talking about these things that, well, to go back to my comment about how in a place like Saskatchewan should be very aware of its history, people aren't and are sort of willingly unaware of the history. So in some ways, the resistance can seem futile. But at the same time, one of the things that's also funny is that I think of the Borg, and I think of that wonderful line from them, and this is a point where I sort of exposed myself to be a Star Trek geek, that they have the wonderful line when the Borg speak at some point and say that, why do you resist us? We just wish to improve the quality of life for all, not understanding that there's another way to see things other than what they want. And not understanding that sometimes diversity and sometimes these sort of different things is extremely important, if not essential. And so there's a kind of funny element within that as well. There's kind of a cutting, biting edge of humor. And it kind of brings me back to when I was talking to Ruth Cuthand about her exhibition at the Mendel called Back Talk. And again, that kind of plays with that notion of sort of speaking back to what is considered the history with a capital H. But she and I were also talking about this kind of, I wouldn't say division, it's too strong a word, but between older First Nations artists and younger First Nations artists, and how some of the younger First Nations artists are certain things that they just, I don't want to say take for granted, it sounds wrong, but there's ideas they have about what history is or what history isn't that is a really good thing, because it's not, well, again, it comes back to something, say, that Neil MacLeod spoke about, that he felt that sometimes post-colonialism spent too much time on the past, and that he kind of hopes that future generations will sort of think more about telling their own stories as opposed to always thinking about being in opposition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think the important point there, and one thing that I learned from my elders when I was growing up, is that you have to find a balance between them. There's one thing about being angry and being frustrated, and there's another aspect that comes into play is, well, what am I going to do about this?
Yeah.
And realizing that at some point, like you said in the beginning about the public apology from the government, and how far does that go? What does it open up? And, mm-hmm. and how long are we going to wait for the government to follow through on things that they said they would do following that apology? Well, they're not going to follow through on that. You know,
yeah.
they went about as far as they're going to go, and we can't wait for them to extend more of a helping hand.
Yeah.
We have to take responsibility for that ourselves. And that's where you find a balance. This is how do you channel that anger and that frustration into something that has more meaning, and that, in fact, has meaning for the whole community. And when I say that, I mean not just for Aboriginal or Indigenous community, but also for the outside world as well, because mm-hmm. what I see the role of artists is that we're negotiators. We're the ones that are out there trying to make a bridge between, let's say, the past and the present, mm-hmm. between cultures, between mainstream society and Aboriginal people, and to the younger generation as well. That's why I use the title of Resistance Is Not Futile, because what I wanted people to see was, in a way that was non-threatening, the comparison between the residential schools and the Borg, because the quote that you made was could almost be an echo of some of the mm-hmm. things that I've found in my research that government officials were saying, you know, in the 19th century. It's the same thing. But what happens by maneuvering in this area is how do you get the people, the community, the audience interested in listening to this type of work? And I think that there's always going to be divisions between generations, between the generation that I'm a part of as a visual artist, and my son's generation, and the ones that are even younger than my son.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always going to be there, and the role that we play. And I think that's so important, is how do we ensure that our work is reaching those, reaching our community as well. And this is what I've been striving for, and it's something more like, I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? It's that exhibition where you actually draw the Aboriginal community into the gallery space, and you make that gallery space into something more than kind of how it's perceived as, kind of an elitist kind of space where, you know, you have to have a certain kind of knowledge or education mm-hmm. in order to understand what's going on in the walls. My reference point is always that I have to be able to present work that I can explain to my elders. And if I have a problem, they give me kind of that cross-eyed look and thinking, what the hell are you talking about? I have to work to make sure that they do understand what. And it's not dumbing it down either.
No, no.
It's just, how do we tell stories? And that's, I think, what the most important point is, because what I found, like, the way that I structure my exhibitions is based on the stories that I listened to my elders speak about when I was a young kid. And I was just mesmerized by them and by the fluidity that they had, and that their stories just weren't about tribal legends and things like that, but it was about everyday life. It was about political events. It was mm-hmm. about almost anything that you could think of. But they seemed to be able to weave it together in a way that allowed me to find my own level within their stories. And then those stories stayed with me, and I remember them today, and they influenced the way that I organized my exhibitions. But that's the objective, you know. It's, and I think it's very different from the larger art world, is that sense of social responsibility. How do we reach the people in our communities? Because the audience is so important. Otherwise, what's the point of doing it?
So, Jeff, your show is at Paved. Resistance is Not Futile. And that runs until July 9th. So that's definitely an exhibition you want to make the effort to go and check out. So thank you very much for making the time to be on the show today.
And thank you. It was a pleasure.
And one of the things I just want to end with is kind of a funny comment, because we just have about a minute, is that the statue, the Champlain statue, I find it kind of bizarre in terms of how they move the Aboriginal from it into the park across the way. And that's supposed to be better.
Yeah, actually, I renamed the Majors Hill Park to Majors Hill Reserve. And I thought it was appropriate, because even though the Indian was removed, it still kind of fell in with that colonial history, and it was appropriate. So.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to say it's also that colonial history of out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much, sir, for making the time today to talk to us on The A-Word.
Thank you.
So you've been listening to The A-Word on CFCR 90.5 FM, or perhaps you've been listening to a stream out live on the web at cfcr.ca. I have been your host, Bart Gazzola, and if you stay tuned to CFCR, you will be listening to Pirate Radio.